Hello, this is Joe Peters with In the Know of Joe, and my guest today is James W. Hughes, Ph.D. He is Dean Emeritus of the Edward J. Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy, and Jim is one of the foremost authorities on New Jersey's population, how we got to where we're at, and where we're going next. So, listen in. I think you're going to learn a lot, and let's get started. Hi, it's Joe Peters at In the Know of Joe, and with me is Professor Jim Hughes from Rutgers, and I'm going to let Jim introduce himself and talk a little about his background. I mean, if we listen to him, he could take the whole hour up with the things he's accomplished.
Well, this is my 53rd year at Rutgers. I started off as an assistant professor, eventually became dean of the Edward J. Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy. I had that position for 22 years, left it in 2017, and the Board of Governors appointed me as a university professor, which means I have the freedom to conduct research in any unit, teach in any unit, and not have to report to another dean. And I've been pretty productive during that time, working hard. And I produced about 34 books, 150 articles. And I'm back into that game again in my post-administrative career. I'm working now on two contracts. I'm the principal investigator on the future of Hoboken Terminal, and also the principal investigator on the future of the Atlantic City Line, both funded by New Jersey Transit. And I've also been producing books again after a deanship lull. In 2022, Population Trends in New Jersey came out. Not a very exciting title, but the press thought it's an accurate title for the book, not pretending it's something that it isn't. And I'm currently finishing up a book with my two colleagues on 200 years of campus development, looking at how the College Avenue campus of Rutgers evolved. And that book should be coming out in maybe September, October. It's a long process since it has 500 images that have to be designed into the book and matched with the text. But it's been really a fun project that I've been working on. So I've been very, very lucky in terms of what I'm able to do at the university.
Super. Both sound like labors of love. And 53 years is good grief. What did you start when you were two?
No, 1971. So,
wow. You know, it's amazing how quick the time has gone by. I went to Rutgers in the 60s all at night, and it seems like it was 10 or 15 years ago, and that's that same time span. It's 60 years ago already. We're lasting longer and still contributing, and I think there's good and bad to everything. I think that's good. I think, yeah. I always, when I was in a corporate world, hated to see a person retire with all the experience they have and the wisdom. And wisdom being defined, having made enough mistakes already that you're starting to do things right. And that's kind of tough. It's a rough road to go through on your own, and using people who are retiring, not going to be around anymore. It's tough. So it's good to see people in the workforce longer, and including,
you know, my perspective is I haven't changed. I've been sort of have momentum, but everybody around me has changed, particularly the last 5-6 years as the baby boom started to retire.
Right.
That's impacting all parts of the economy because we're losing really institutional knowledge critical people who have experienced changes over time. So we're having that transition from baby boomers to Gen X in terms of the C-suite.
Yeah, and we're also seeing the same thing in real estate. Our current status in real estate is we have a huge shortage of inventory, and the things that make people buy a house or sell a house haven't changed. So there's a pent-up demand. They call them the 5 Ds. Let me see if I can get them straight. There's diploma, diamonds, diapers, divorce, and death. And then you throw in people move around a little. That's typically why somebody buys or sells a house. And right now we're bumping into it's time for the boomers to move on. Yet two-thirds of the houses, if I have my statistics correct, in New Jersey don't have a child of school age in it. And these boomers are living there with lots of equity, and they're sort of not going to move for a couple of reasons. They're comfortable and still some in the workplace. But on the other hand, the interest rates have stopped them from looking at another because they either own it outright or have a very low interest rate and aren't going to jump to a big one. But I think the baby boomers moving could start the logjam.
Yeah, but
Right.
right now it's interest rates are sort of like golden handcuffs. You're not going to give up. If you have a mortgage,
Right.
you're not going to give up a 3.5% mortgage for a 6.5% mortgage. And so if we look at the entire inventory in the state, we're awash with bedrooms, but the bedrooms aren't distributed the way they should be. So you have a husband and wife in a four-bedroom house. Again, they can justify it, say, well, each of us has an office, and then we have another one for some other function. But yeah, there's much more square footage for aging baby boomers than for young millennials and just starting there, or in the midst of child rearing.
Right. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, we're witnessing the affordability issue stopping people. Well, there's a couple of things. Affordability, and part of that's interest, part of that is rising prices. But people are making more money than we were making when we were down there as just out of college. And at the same time, there's no construction in New Jersey for first-time buyers. There's very little construction in, I'm in Hunter and Somerset County, my business. All the construction here is at the
You know,
Marina
mainly it's,
and up level.
yeah, several points I think you raised that are important. There has been some speculation that we're going to have later on in the decade, if interest rates correct to a more affordable level, a massive shift of baby boomers cashing out after 5 years, five decades of equity buildup. And so the problem could possibly solve itself as time goes by. But we're a very mature state. We had in the post-war period from 1950 to 1970, at that time Philadelphia was the third largest city in the country. New York City was the first, the biggest city in the country. So we were the epicenter of that great suburbanization move, coming in from the west into South Jersey, Central Jersey, and coming out of New York City. So we were building 1,000 units per week for 1,000 straight weeks. That's a
Right.
million housing units in that 20-year period between 1950 and 1970. And we weren't worried about land preservation. We weren't worried about congestion at that period of time. I think Levittown, New Jersey, which is now Willingboro, the Levitt bought up 170 historic farmsteads. And no concern about that, of losing that. The world has changed dramatically since then. And as we've filled up all of the towns that have rail stations and good mass transit facilities, the question is, how do you build houses on a quarter acre lot that could be affordable to first-time home buyers? There's just not land available in those most desirable communities. And then as you move farther outward, those are areas that are not attractive to job seekers, because increasingly the jobs are centered really in urban areas. And I guess one example of that is Bell Labs in Murray Hill. They're going to move to downtown New Brunswick, to the new center there that's being built across from the train station. And let's see, I think it's Sanofi is moving from Bridgewater to the M Station project in downtown Morristown.
Yeah, I
So
heard that.
we have We have a very, we're in a very difficult situation. I think places like North Carolina, South Carolina, or where New Jersey was in 1950, easy development, and affordable land. Land is extraordinarily expensive.
It's interesting. I read D.F.
We've
Horton's
taken a
work.
lot of land out of the buildable category into open space.
I read that D.F. Horton, who's a builder, but not primarily in our area, but a large-scale builder in Texas, has three quarters of their new construction is at the 375K price point. We have nothing in New Jersey at the 375K price point. There's hardly any inventory under 500K. It goes immediately when it comes on. And they are, that's a good example of what we were doing with Levittown back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. But there's no way you could build a 375K house in New Jersey with the lack of land and then the ability, all the jurisdictions that have been put into place as far as wetlands and you can name it, there's a litany of them. So it appears to me, and that I work the business full time, that the builders have given up on trying to do that. And then you've also got the affordable housing thing that's an issue. And they're building apartments. And it also appears to me on a different tangent that the baby bust, the end of the birth area is about 3 years from now, where they would be buying first time part. They see that coming and they're not just building into it because we're going to have less and less people moving into the area. But it doesn't help the people. And I talked to a guy yesterday who's a mortgage professional, and he said, first time buyer for two, they go first time buyer loan program that's about 140K or under to qualify. He says that's two college grads, 1 to 2 years out of college, earning about 70K each on average. And they can't find anything. They're living with mom and dad, and they're starved for getting out and getting on their own. And every year they're spending a little bit more, which is keeping the prices going up, not getting them to come down. So we do have some squeeze going on. And then I think the other thing that I'd like to talk out with you a little bit, we talked before we got started, is there's a lot of immigration into New Jersey where there's people moving out, there's people moving in. The people moving in are typically coming into the pharma jobs, for an example, to fill entry level and medium level jobs. And without them, we couldn't run some of the companies we're running. And the people moving out are kids, as you said, that go to school in New York or Pennsylvania or the Carolinas and just never come back.
Yeah, well, there's no silver bullet to change that, unfortunately.
Right.
Also, in the 50s and 60s, we had federal grants to expand sewer systems and treatment plants and the like. So most of the vacant land is going to be well and septic. You don't have that infrastructure
Right.
certainly in place. And as you alluded to before, it's a good thing. We have much, much higher standards for insulation and energy consumption and the like, but that all adds into the purchase price there. And the stuff we built in the 50s and 60s, very few had central air conditioning, at least in the 50s.
Right.
The original Levitt Cape Cod was an 800 square foot tribute to modesty. A small bedroom, I mean, one small bathroom for maybe mom, pop, and 3.5 kids at that time. So living standards have changed dramatically.
The other thing I'm seeing is that people are spending a bigger portion of their gross income on housing. We used to have a 28% hurdle rate to say that no more than 28% of your gross should be spent on a house. Now it's up in a 40 percentile where you're spending a bigger percent on your house, and now you still have to have another percentage for your car and for your utilities and for your investments and whatever. And pretty soon you're above your net take home. Which to me gets a little scary because people say, well, I'll put it on a credit card and pay it off next year when I get the bonus, and sort of never happens. And a credit card, I don't think a day goes by I'm not hearing about increased balances on credit cards at very high interest rates.
Yeah, I mean, we're maintaining our standard of living the old-fashioned way, by borrowing and building up credit balances, and
Right.
that has been soaring. I mean, we've been living off in 21, 20, 20, 21, 22. I think we built up an oversaving nationally of $2.2 trillion, and that was essentially the transfer of the federal rescue funds
Right.
into people's checking account and the like. 80% of that has been used up. So it's going to carry us for a couple months through this year. But already we've lost some discipline there, whatever behavioral changes were caused by the pandemic. And people are just building up credit. If they want to buy something, they're buying it and not worried about how are they eventually going to pay it off.
Right. You're gambling to some extent that I'll earn more money next year than I'm earning this year, and I'll pay it off out of that. And then they hit the inevitable, which is, my God, the company just downsized and I'm part of it. And I start to see a lot of that going on. I just read this morning where IBM has said, either you come to work or you go work somewhere else. They want people in 3 days a week, and they don't want anybody living more than 50 miles away from their offices. And it's complicated by the fact that they closed a lot of offices. So it's almost an impossible goal to achieve on the
Yeah,
employee
there is some
side.
good news. Yeah, there is some good news. I mean, the payroll employment data came out the first Friday of the month,
Right.
and everybody was shocked. They were expecting maybe 130,000 jobs, and it came in over 350,000
Did it
jobs.
really?
And the unemployment rate is at 3.7%, and the wage increases have been greater than inflation. So, we still have a very, very strong labor market. And you
Right.
realize we're now in the 45th month of economic expansion. And May will mark the start of the 5th year of economic expansion. And I think more New Jerseyans believe in flying saucers than believe the expansion is soon going to be in its 5th year, but it is going to be there.
That is good news. I always question, well, first of all, about 175,000 of the employment number goes to just growth. So it's not all new jobs. It's people came of working age and went in and took a job. But the fact that there's always an adjustment to previous months that they don't talk about scares me at times too. I don't know what that was. I didn't see the numbers this month yet.
Oh, they upgraded December's number to over 300,000
They did.
jobs.
So it went up,
So
not
there was
down.
a 2 month burst there that nobody really thought about. And this January number was the 24th straight month where unemployment has been below 4%, 24 straight months. You have to go back to the late 1960s. And the Vietnam War, which really shrunk the civilian labor force, have anything close to that. So it really is, to some degree, is an extraordinary period.
It sure is. I mean, you cannot argue those numbers. They're encouraging. That what do they mean, inflationary? I read that salaries, inflationary adjusted, are about 4.5% below where they were 2 years ago, or maybe when the current administration came in. I don't know how biased that opinion was, but prices definitely aren't. And when you start to see people with money to spend, prices are going to. I went into ShopRite yesterday. I thought they had a. I shouldn't mention them by name, but my local grocery store is a ShopRite, and I would think it's same no matter where you went. It seemed to me they had a loss leader on eggs. They were about $6 a dozen at the height of things, and then they were back to $1.39. Now they're $2.39 again. And I'm saying, either they pull the loss leader out because they put the eggs all the way in the back of the store, so you got to walk all the way through to get them. But the prices. When we say the rate of inflation has dropped, that doesn't mean prices are coming down. That means they're just not going to go up as quickly as they've been going up. They're pretty much going to stay where they're at, with the exception of a few things. And salaries are going up, so I'm not sure how it all adds up. And
Well,
what
that there's been some concern by the current administration. I mean, inflation has been dropping pretty significantly since its peak in mid-2022, and they're wondering, well, why are consumers glum? At it, consumer confidence has increased the last month or two, far better than it was, but it's still below pre-pandemic levels. But the concern was, hey, this is really good news. Inflation came down much, much faster than anybody had thought. However, even food purchased for consumption at home, that is, the supermarket purchases for the most part, only increased like, geez, a 0.5% the past year. But at the same time, food prices are 25% higher than they were in February of 2020, just before the pandemic hit. So that's a permanent increase of 25%. And you do have fluctuations in there. And I think the egg prices, there has been some disease hitting the chicken flocks.
Okay.
And I think that's one of the reasons why they've surged again. But you always have those specific events in there that cause
Right.
it, individual items to go
Like
up and down.
coffee
But we are
fluctuates.
reverting to trend reversion, which is the economist's way of saying we're getting back on trend. If we extend what happened between 2015 and 2020, during the pandemic, we had sharp increases and decreases in there, but everything settling back in is just extended the 2015 to 2020 trend. And that's happened with the growth in online shopping. We had a massive surge with e-commerce, and it's come off of that peak, but it's still growing as fast as it was before the pandemic.
So how does it all add up? I mean, we're looking at New Jersey for the next 12 months. It's roughly the beginning of the second month of the year. Last year we sold probably 25% fewer houses than we did the year before. It doesn't mean the year before was normal, but that's what we typically compare it to. But the year before was the first year post-pandemic, so to speak. So if you consider the pandemic years some unicorn years, you can't compare to them. We're still nowhere near where we were before the pandemic started. We're sitting with about a third of the inventory that we used to have, and house prices are probably 40 to 50% higher than they were 5 years ago. It's a disproportionate, because it keeps going up, thing to compare. The average person looking for the first time buy can't find it because there's no inventory. And when they can find it, interest rates are double what they thought they would be or what they were 2 years ago. And they're coming down a little, but they're still about double. And the house price is up 50%. It's like, I can't win. I'm going to keep renting or live with mom and dad. As a matter of fact, we're witnessing mom and dad helping them now get out of the house. I can understand that feeling.
Yeah, well, that was a pattern after World War II, when a lot of the housing in New Jersey was two or three family frame structures,
Right.
that in many of our cities and the like. And when a young couple first got married, their parents would live on the second floor and they'd have cheap rent on the first floor there. And they did that for 4 or 5 years as they scrimped and got together a down payment. But we had much more generous financing at that point in time. So staying with parents is reflective of how we used to live at one time. And we had a glorious period in the 80s and 90s where you didn't have to do that. But the price ratcheting up during 2021 and 2022, when we had massive pandemic moves of millennials out of shoeboxes in Brooklyn to a single family home, really that price surge in 2021 and 22 before mortgage rates changed was probably one of the biggest surges in history. But that's permanently in the system now. They're not going to drop. So it does make it much, much harder today for millennials in their late 20s starting to raise families to make that suburban move. And you were right. You said before, the past 15 years, we underbuilt single family units because millennials entering the housing market wanted to go to cities, wanted to go to the Hudson River waterfront and Brooklyn and all the 24/7 live work play environments. So we lost really over a decade of single family unit production, helping to make that the shortage of inventory today much more severe than it would have been had we had normal building patterns during that period.
Interesting. I'm reluctant to say how to resolve it because I'm not sure it is resolvable. I think the better question is, what do you see next? We've gone through this contraction of building starter homes, and we're sitting with a lot of people, usually late 20s, early 30s, getting married. The age at marriage and having the first child has moved up a little, and the number of children has moved down a little that people are typically have. How does that all add up to what happens next?
Yeah, well, we can do some international comparisons when we look at what's called the total fertility rate. And it's a metric that indicates how many children a woman would have during her lifetime. And at the peak of the baby boom in 1957, it was 3.8. A woman would produce almost four children. Replacement level fertility is 2.1. That is, if you have that fertility rate, you'd have a stable population without any growth going forward and no shrinkage. It's down to about 1.7 today. So, we're way below replacement level. However, the fertility rate in China is now down to 1.0. In Italy, it's about 1.1. In South Korea, it's also 1 point something, very, very low. If that's any indication, we're not going to have another baby boom again. And we're going to continue to have smaller families going forward. But certain areas of the country around Boston, around New York, even around Philadelphia, those are high-priced areas, and there's no way to make them affordable for the most part.
Interesting observation. Every red light you stop at, you see apartment buildings going up. You don't see new houses going up anymore. And even the apartment rents, the fellow that was the mayor of Somerville walked me around and showed me, Dennis Sullivan, what was going on in Somerville. And his average starting rate for a two-bedroom rental, and that didn't include garage space because you got to rent a couple of garage spaces too, was $2,800. That used to be above what the average mortgage payment was. So rentals have even gotten very competitive and pricey because, once again, if you can't buy a house, you're going to rent. And if you're going to rent, and there's more people renting than renters renting out, prices go up, supply and demand.
Yeah, but you're also, this doesn't ameliorate things, but in the 60s, when we were really building a lot of garden apartments in New Jersey, and what marketing genius created that term garden apartments? These weren't the tenements.
I was thinking about it as you said it. I've never seen a garden yet.
What the A lot of the projects, the older units built in the 60s, were only 8 units per acre. So there was a lot of grass around those. But just think what they were. They maybe have had one air conditioner in the window, small kitchens, a very modest bathroom and the like. The apartments we're building today are quite expansive with a lot of amenities beside the housing unit itself. They have granite in within the unit, maybe a granite countertop, stainless steel appliances, and then you have maybe a community pool, community clubhouse. You have potential meeting rooms or areas within the complex where you could work, have that as your work from home location. So we're really talking about a different animal, and the densities are maybe some of the things in Somerville, 30 units per acre, quite a difference.
Yeah, Somerville is probably not a good comparison because it's like Hoboken West. And Dennis called them walking wallets. These people walk downtown 28 times a month and ate something. And it was driving his economy in the right direction. I'm not sure what it did to his traffic impact, but it's a bustling. But where I live in Hunterdon County, we've got 16 per acre, 32 per acre. I mean, it depends what you want. And some are nicer and more elbow rooms than the other. And people coming out of an apartment and going into a townhouse think they're in heaven. But some heavens are better than other heavens, I guess is what I'm saying. So you can get into some really expansive townhouses today. The one I'm in is 2,300 square feet plus a full finished basement. I mean, my first house wasn't half that size.
Yeah, and that's the average size of this nationally of single family units is about 2,300 square feet,
Wow.
and that figure has been coming down. But I think it's affected by the first time home buyers in Texas and North Carolina, where the builders have ratcheted down units to make them more affordable.
Interesting. So 2024 obviously is going in the right direction economy-wise. The stock, well, I don't know what the market did today, but that was probably good news for the market. The market did really good last year, when you might argue it shouldn't have, but it goes on and on. What do you see next?
Well, sometimes you have a perverse reaction by the market in terms of, if the economy is so strong, the market had been counting on an interest rate reduction in March or maybe June, May or June in there. But if the economy is so strong, now the market's attitude may be, uh-oh, the interest rates are going to stay high for longer because they don't want runaway inflation, or Fed doesn't want runaway inflation again. I think we're going to be trending just as we'll have a should have a repeat of 2023, except we may have more labor shortages because we've had unemployment below 4% for so long nationally. I'm a little worried about New Jersey because our last unemployment reading was 4.7% versus 3.7% for the nation as a whole. And we haven't quite figured out why that's the case in the face of pretty strong job growth that we've had in the state. In fact, the average job growth per year in the 2010 to 2020 period was about 30,000 jobs per year in New Jersey. We had a big slowdown at the end of the year, but December had 60,000 jobs. People would be doing a happy dance in Trenton in the 19, in the 2010s if we had 60,000 jobs per year. So again, my expectation today is really a continuation of what we've seen. But there are these geopolitical risks, that could really shake things up. And expansions are the old saying is expansions don't die of old age. They don't die in their beds. The Federal Reserve usually murders them by increasing interest rates to combat inflation, or some serious external event like an energy shock, which we experienced twice, in the 1970s. And I think there's a risk of some external shocks where we haven't seen the inflation yet from the shipping crisis through the Suez Canal and the Middle East and the like. And that's going to ratchet down, ratchet prices up, I think, going forward. So the Fed, may stick to the same interest rate for a longer period of time. But again, those are unpredictable events.
What about the influx of undocumented people coming into New Jersey, much less the country in general? It's a big number. New Jersey isn't like
Well, for
California.
the most part, I mean, a lot of service industries really depend on them. I mean, and some entrepreneurs in there, at the lower end of the income scale, create landscape companies, lawn cutting companies, and that's And builders, really need that influx of labor for roofers and construction and laborers and the like. So, otherwise, and that's so that really keeps inflation down to some degree. If we had severe labor shortages, or what call is a primary reason why wages sometimes can really soar. And again, the economy would slow dramatically without that labor force.
Right, and I think that's probably a unspoken political reason why it's being done. It's helping the economy by having them here, by having low price labor to fill the low price jobs that isn't even worth automating. I think AI, I was thinking when you mentioned your book and how it was being copyright and all of that, I was wondering if AI had affected that industry, but it's going to affect a lot of other industries as well. I know when I take a description for a house that I write up, I give it to ChatGPT and it gives me back words I could never come up with to describe that house. And that's just a simple example. No matter what you do, AI is helping bridge the shortage for people, and at the same time, it's overlapping to the point where some jobs that are easy to automate are getting automated now that couldn't have been automated 10 years ago, like copywriters and proofwriting and things like that, low-end legal.
Well, that's always been the case. If you go back, oh, to the 70s, most organizations still had clerk typists. So people would write out their reports by hand sometimes, or dictate them, and it'd have to be described. And so we lost that whole job category of clerk typists. But when we all learned how to do word processing. But every time you create new jobs by that. You had to have If you have your word processing and information technology systems, you need a lot of people to maintain that. So there, we lost low-paying jobs and created higher-paying jobs. And most organizations still have a hard time finding the tech people to run their systems. So if history is any guide, we'll be creating new jobs to handle the new technology.
Yeah, and I think of the same example because I grew up in data is what happened to all the key punch operators? I mean, there's no need for a key punch operator anymore. We figured out creative ways, technology-wise, to capture the information that we need. And it's almost scary how quickly it changes hands. I mean, put a charge on your charge card and look at the statement, and it's there in 10 seconds. I mean, it's real time. And,
I was looking at that at the my local ShopRite, and the people, the cash register people, were just scanning each individual good. And I remember as a teenager, I was working at a supermarket as a cashier, and I still have the muscle memory of typing in the price of the individual good, and then shifting up to get a subtotal, shifting down to get a It's like riding a bicycle. I'll never lose that. But boy, what a level of efficiency that improvement is. And yeah, you can get on your you don't need a paper receipt because it's emailed to you almost immediately, and you can count.
I think Costco is another great example. I mean, they're double checking that you're not using somebody else's admission card, but the Costco self-checkout is just absolutely amazing. The people line up for that rather than wanting to go through a person anymore because they know they can check out. And there's somebody there. If you got 100 items, it scans it with a gun. And it's replacing low-end labor with automation. And the automation is what comes next. It's kind of scary. We came this far already.
Or even automobile servicing. We used to have a lot of mechanics that try to figure out what's wrong with the car. Now, at least my BMW dealer in Flemington, you drive in, they look on the computer, they know exactly what's wrong with your car and replace it. I still remember way back in the 60s, somebody when they had a convertible that had a solid roof, and somebody in there with a screwdriver trying to fix it and the like. I don't think it ever got fixed correctly in there.
I mean, it's gotten down to I drive a high-end GM car, and it's the same thing. It tells me when one tire is low, it sends me a text, and it tells me it's time to change the oil and how many miles I went since I've been there last. And I said to myself, I wonder who else it's telling. You know, is this government getting this and using this information? But a lot of people don't care for that. I love it because I've always been on the IT side of the fence. But at the same time, it then gets into invasion of privacy matters. What didn't we talk about that you think we should mention, Jim, as far as looking 2024 and out in New Jersey?
Well, I think there are a lot of public policy issues. The congestion pricing scheme for New York City really discriminates against New Jersey because we have a lot of people who are going to pay that fee to drive into New York.
Right.
And they're using all the revenue to upgrade the MTA, their transit system, but New Jersey Transit doesn't get any of that money at all. So we should get some share of that congestion pricing because it's going to should shift more people to mass transit, and we have a funding crisis there. I think the as the federal rescue funds run out, we're going to have some budgetary problems, not in 2024 or 25, but as we get in maybe into 20, the latter part of 25, 26, there may be a fiscal cliff in there. And so there's going to be some tax battles going on in the state. So it's going to be, some political firestorms going on, which is not good for the economy.
Do you think the state is right? Next year's a gubernatorial election again, and term limits are in effect. So I don't want to hold you politically to what you see, but we could have a change next year. We almost had a change last time. It was within 60,000 votes. Not sure what that means. I'm just sitting here in Hunterdon County seeing the governor want to use an old mental facility to house people that are coming into the state undocumented, and the county's fighting it like crazy for obvious reasons. But they may not win. He may win. And then, where am I going with this? Change is the only constant in the world. It goes on and on and on and on, and we can fight it. But I think if politics changed, and I watched what happened in the state with the last Republican governor we had, he wasn't able to get much done, even though he had some fairly good ideas. And the governor in a Democratic state for the last 8 years got a lot done, which half of the state might not agree with him on, but I don't know.
Well, if Washington is a model, then we're in trouble, to say the least.
Maybe we should just park it on that, boy. That's an interesting observation because I'm listening to opinion, and one of the other things I think people should do is not just read the headlines, but sort of read what's underneath it, because the headlines a lot of times are slanted. What's really happening is kind of scary, and the fact that you've got very close to you people that are open arm welcoming all of these immigrations, like New York City, even though they're having their problems with it now, they're overburdened with it. They've got to spill over. I worked in New York for 23 years, and I walked down the street and I'd see a pigeon eating garbage out of the gutter. And I said, you know what? That pigeon can get up and fly 2 miles and be in New Jersey. But people are the same. There's bums begging on a corner. And they could probably beg in New Jersey and do a lot better, but they never do. So I think people are kind of predictable, like pigeons. But at the same time, we're going to have a massive change on our hands here in New Jersey. And we haven't got a place to put the people we've got on the low end who are making $100,000 on the low end. And now we've got a lot more people coming in nowhere near that that are going to work the service industry, so maybe make the Alice wages of about $40,000 a year.
Well, immigration has been shifting. I mean, New York and New Jersey, we were always one of the epicenters going back to the European waves of the 1880s, 1890s, early 1900s, and the like. Most immigrants are looking to have a better life for themselves, and they're pretty smart, so they're going now increasingly to Texas and North Carolina and South Carolina, where the economies are really expanding. And again, it's a bit more affordable for them than in New Jersey. Plus, you have as once a base of new immigrant populations grow, it's more friendly for successive waves to go there. So we could see, a greater shift throughout the country to the more affordable areas, to the growing areas, rather than coming into the most expensive places to live and slower growing economies. But somehow we got through the great waves of the early part of the century. And I like to point out that about 22% of New Jersey today is foreign born. In 1910, it was over 30% were foreign born. So we're sort of revisiting history. And then we had closed the immigration gates down in 1924 with the Alien Exclusion Act. So by 1960, it was below 10%. So when you compare 60 to today, wow, that's really high. If you compare it to 1910, we're still below where we were at that point in time.
Interesting. Interesting. It's a good observation. It's everybody tends to, if you think about life, what do you remember back? You remember your grandmother vaguely. You don't remember much further back than that. So that's two generations. That's 50 years. And we don't think back 100 years. And 100 years ago, when this was all going on, that was the case. And Ellis Island was interesting to visit when I went there. It has to be 20 years ago. Lee Iacocca was still around because he had this project to, document that your ancestors came in for Ellis Island, and it gave him some money to do things there. People lasted on Ellis Island. I thought they were there for days and days, and 2 to 4 hours, and they were gone. You had to have $25 in your pocket and a place to go, but you came through and you went. I think the big difference we've got right now is we don't even do that, but we've got people coming in at the same rate.
Yeah, and they dispersed pretty rapidly, but a lot of them were like in the Lower East Side in the tenements, and that was really hardship at that point in time. Very limited social services and what have you, medical care and the like was absent. Again, it's ever changing. No
Ever
way to stop
changing.
it.
Well, as I said, the only thing constant is change. And I forget who said that. I came across one interesting comment by Einstein in the last year, and he said the only two infinite things are the universe and stupidity. And he said, I'm starting to have my doubts about the universe. And it's about the pigeon walking down the curb. I mean, there's a better life, but you don't know about it because you don't get out of it. And you come home and you turn the TV on. People wake up and put the TV on first thing in the morning, drive me crazy. Why not get up and read a book? Do something that you intend to do. Anyway, Jim, it's always good to talk to you. And I hope we can do it again at some point, 6 to 12 months out.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, your insight is good. You're saying expect more of the same for this year. It's not going to look much different than last year. But if there was one thing that would change this year, what would you think it would be?
No, I don't see any big changes on the horizon. I mean, the economy will slow, growth will slow, because again, there are still some delayed impacts of higher interest rates that haven't really surfaced yet. But I don't think they're big enough to stall the economy, just enough maybe to slow it. Trend reversion, we're going back to the long-term trends.
Cool. It's always good to talk with Jim because he's got his hand on the pulse of New Jersey's population traits, how we got to where we're at and where we're going next, and how it's going to affect our local markets. If there's one takeaway from today's talk, it sounds like 2024 is going to look a lot like 2023. Let's see how things turn out when we return to talk to Jim next year.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Here's what his satisfied customers have to say. Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless. Joe is diligent and responsive without being pushy and truly keeps his clients' best interest in mind. He would return calls within minutes if he didn't pick up. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com. You can call 908-238-0118 or text to 908-304-4660.